On behalf of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, I am very grateful to welcome you to Sri Radha Gopinath Temple. Today, I'd like to speak something more on the verse from our morning Srimad Bhagavatam class. The verse is from a chapter from the fifth canto, explaining the activities of Lord Rishabhdev. Sure, the verse has come. Rishabhdev, who is an avatar of Lord Vishnu, ruled over the kingdom in such an exemplary way. He and his family, which consisted of wife Jayanti and 100 sons, eldest amongst them was Maharaj Bharat, of whom this planet and later this particular country was named after. In every way, his qualities, his lifestyle were perfectly according to the teachings of the Holy Scriptures. He was moral, generous. He was extremely devoted to spiritual practices. Bhagavad Gita teaches what great men do, common people follow. So to take any position of leadership, it is our responsibility before God to be such an example through our words, our deeds, that those who are subordinate to us will have all encouragement and knowledge to pursue the highest perfection of life. The Gita describes janma mrityu jara vyadi dukha doshana darshana, that this world is dukalaya. It is a place of misery, a place of faults. Why? Because whatever we do, it is plagued with imminent birth, old age, disease, and death. So how is it that the eternal soul, whose conditioned nature, constitutional nature, is supreme bliss, how could we find any lasting or substantial satisfaction here? In today's society, a successful family is one that provides children with adequate clothes, comfortable home, proper medical care, good education, funding to make a good earning in the future, marry daughter to wealthy family, bring your son up in such a way that he can be very, very productive in earning and expanding. These considerations do have their place, but in a cultured society, It is all according to today's verse, Will o' the Wisp. It is all unsubstantial. What really is success is to the extent that people are imbibing, pursuing, and realizing the truth. Krishna explains in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, what is the truth? When you have thus learned the truth, you will know that all living beings, they are in me, they are mine, they are of me. We are all part of Krishna. We are all meant for the loving service of Krishna. That is the only true purpose of life. Everything else is temporary. Real culture is our education, our occupation, our family responsibilities. Everything is there. They are not necessarily to be renounced or to be neglected, but they must be built on the foundation of truth. That I am the eternal soul, I am part of God, and my purpose, the purpose of life, the sanatan dharma of the soul, is to serve God with love. How to purify the heart to access that love. So Rishabhdev performed yajnas, lived and ruled in such a way that he provided the necessities of life, but more than that, he gave his citizens the path of life with such affection that they didn't want anything else. The verse of today. No one likes to possess anything that is like will-o'-the-wisp or a flower in the sky. For everyone knows very well that such things do not exist. When Lord Rishabhdev ruled this planet in Bharatvarsha, even common men did not want to ask anything at any time or by any means. No one ever asks for a will or the wisp. In other words, everyone was completely satisfied, and therefore there was no chance of anyone's asking for anything. The people were absorbed in great affection for the king. Since this affection was always expanding, they were not inclined to ask for anything. In the world today, leaders are generally voted according to how many things they can supply to their citizens. Yes? This is what politics is about. There are people in America, just like, for instance, in the previous election, not this one, but the previous one, just 4 years ago, there was the dispute about abortion. Now, a person who is a little bit sincere in his or her thinking and honest with themselves understands that abortion is nothing less than murder. You can put so many sociological, psychological, emotional, or biological names to it. But it is a child. At one time, you, your lover, your children, your father, your mother, all your ancestors, everyone that is near and dear to you and you love, was at one time a little embryo in the womb. And because there was a certain amount of respect an affection on the part of the mother and the father of the relatives, that little embryo, which is a spirit soul, full-fledged spirit soul in an undeveloped body, was given the opportunity to grow into what you call you. So there's no, it's just logic, common sense, supported by all scripture and saints, that the life of a person begins at the time of conception. Now, for popular purposes, you could make any type of logic, any type of justification, trying to curb the population explosion and all of this. But the fact is, it's murder of an innocent, helpless child. Actually, some of the greatest tyrants, who are hated by human society as being the greatest demons in history, they had the same idea of this overpopulation. Hitler tried to wipe out an entire race of people. Killed over 8 million innocent women, children, and old men, and ordinary people who were helpless. Because he felt that this segment of population was an obstruction to the earth. According to some of our devotees in Russia who have studied the matter a little, Stalin killed over 25 million people. And they were all his own innocent peasants of Russia. They were eating food. But in his categorization and his justification, and he was probably convinced of it and must have convinced all those who were working under him, that if we want to actually make the world a better place, we have to reduce it of the population of these one unwanted elements. Ethnic cleansing, persecution. Yes. So everyone has their subjective understanding of what is required to make the world a better place. Whether you kill embryos in the womb for population, or you kill people, you try to wipe out an entire religious society, or you try to wipe out different castes or different creeds or different people that we just don't really care for. And people are convincing of it. But the fact is, it is murder in the eyes of God. It is murder according to the laws of material nature, which means the karma will come upon you full-fledged with all its forth force and fury, whatever philosophy or names you give it, or whatever biological terminologies you make for it, or whatever social justifications. It's the same thing. The laws of God are hard and fast. How did I get off on that? What was I speaking? Huh? Ah, election. Thank you. Sometimes I do that. So there is a discussion on me. There's a big debate. And the person who was running, they asked him, if your daughter asked you for permission to have an abortion, would you give her permission? He said, no. But your party is supporting abortion. How do you know? He knows it's wrong. He knows it's not right. But he knows if he says it, he'll lose tens of millions of votes. So he can't say it.
So how could there be truth in a government that is just trying to supply things to people because they need those things, they want those things, and if they don't get those things, they will not vote for you and you will lose your power? So many situations like that. We discussed this morning Kurukshetra. Dharma Kshetra, Kurukshetra, Punya Bhumi. The place of religious sacrifices, the place of piety, the place of Dharma. And for so many years, alcohol and meat was outlawed to be sold or even imported. You couldn't even transport it in. I thought, this is one place that hasn't been thoroughly stricken by Kali Yuga. But a couple years later, I saw liquor stores and meat shops. So what is this? I talked to one of the politicians. So we have no choice. The people are demanding it. And if we don't give it to them and make the laws so that they can provide it, they'll vote us out. Compromise because the people want all these things. The whole world is so much infatuated by things. What is a thing? It's something. Prabhupada explains, all of these things are will-o'-the-wisp. Maya, the illusory energy, is promising us happiness, satisfaction, if we have this thing or those things. But the soul, what is it seeking? The soul is seeking Krishna, the bliss of Krishna, the peace of spiritual consciousness. But we've forgotten that. We've so deeply forgotten it that we're trying to replace that experience with being a proprietor. Essentially, Krishna explains in Gita, if you want peace, Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarva lokameshwaram suridam sarva bhutanam gyatvamam shanti richchati. Prabhupada called this the peace formula. If you just understand, recognize, and live by these three principles, you will find eternal peace. That Krishna is the supreme proprietor of everything that exists, all planets and everything within those planets. He's the ultimate enjoyer. We are all meant to be enjoyed by God. And He's the best well-wishing friend of all living beings. That faith is the beginning of real life. The spirit soul. What do we possess? Actually, proprietorship means control. And what do we have control over? In India, even if you're a landlord, yes, that means lord of the land. Landlord means lord of the land. But what kind of landlord? You have your tenants and you can't do anything with them. Your tenants tell you what to do. And you have to obey them. Otherwise the government will come and punish you. If you want them to leave, no way. You have to pay them the full property value of your property. And then they don't even have to accept it. Yes? What kind of a lord of the land is that? We haven't created anything. We've just usurped what God has already given to humanity. and we call it our own. But there are so many circumstances that can take it away from us, through thieves, through economic crises. And ultimately, by the power of time, we have to die. We have to leave this body, even if we want to hold on to it with all of our life force. We just want to hold on to our body. We want to hold on to our family members. We want to hold on to our property. We want to hold on to our wealth. We want to hold on to our prestige and all of the skills and arts that we've been given, that we've given our whole life to accumulate. But at any moment, by the power of time, it's all taken away. We have no control. We are not proprietors of anything. Krishna says, time I am. Material nature is working under my direction. Krishna is the proprietor of everything. Everything is owned by Krishna. Now, isn't that a wonderful conception? But do we really like that idea? When we do, we'll go back to Godhead. But we want to claim God's property as my own. Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. When Krishna explains in this beautiful verse from the fifth chapter of Gita how he is the enjoyer, the supreme enjoyer. And the real love, which is the nature of the soul, is to be enjoyed by Krishna. But if we try to be the enjoyer, we implicate ourselves in so much karmic conditions, which is the cause of suffering. This is Prahlad Maharaj's wonderful explanation. If you want to stop suffering and be happy, it's simple. Stop trying to be happy in this world. That's all. Just stop trying to be happy in this world. No more suffering and bliss. But how can we stop trying to be happy in this world when we are by nature pleasure seeking? To be enjoyed by God is the ultimate enjoyment for the soul. But when we want to be independent enjoyers, separate from the will of the Supreme, we become implicated and complicated by so many karmic situations. And it's very difficult to get out. But according to this verse, all those things that Maya is promising us, hope, security, and happiness through, are like flowers that are growing in the sky. Has anyone ever seen a flower growing in the sky? It does not exist. It's an illusion. Or the will-o'-the-wisp. Something that is just a phantasmagoria. It's just an imagination. It's a mental conception that has no reality to support it. Or Prabhupada in the purport quotes from Bengali, Goda Dimba, which means the egg of a horse. Now, I hate to be the one to inform many of you, but horses do not lay eggs. Shocking news, I know. Because you've dedicated all your life, and you've dedicated so many previous lives with the hope of achieving this horse's egg. But there's no such thing. That is the reality. We're trying to find happiness where it does not really exist. All the things in this world are meant to be utilized according to our nature in the service of God. Then it's wonderful. Rupa Goswami explained this principle of real renunciation or vairagya. Not that you have to give up everything. That's very difficult. And in many ways, it's very unnatural. If something can be utilized in a very dynamic and wonderful way in the service of God for the welfare of others, you should utilize it. You should not renounce it. We have this body. We can neglect our body because it's Maya, or we could use our body in the service of Krishna, which is a higher principle. One is an expression of love, and one is just a very small-minded ideal of trying to be free from karma. The impersonalists are very much careful not to implicate themselves in karma. But devotees understand the positive side. Yes, we will give up all these egoistic, sensual, selfish activities and words, but we'll use our words and our actions for something higher, for the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur shocked the Babajis of Radhakund when he drove in a very big, expensive automobile. Huh? And he was wearing shoes. What is this? This is not sannyas. This is not Babaji. Most of them were sitting there, and many were smoking bidis. If we can use this car, if we could use it, Prabhupada was flying on airplanes. Such a simple sannyasi with one little bag of cereal and a change of clothes and an umbrella. He went on Jaladuta and he came back to India on a jet airplane. Air India. And later on he progressed to other airlines also. So was that less renunciation? Going on a cargo ship which takes 1 month and coming on an airplane which takes 12 hours? No. He was using it for Krishna. Whether he was walking barefoot in Vrindavan or whether he was riding on a jet airplane, his mood was the same, to serve Krishna. That is real renunciation. Whatever we have, we use it for the highest purpose of the soul, to please God. Sam sudhira hari toshanam. That is the beauty of life. That is the real art of living. Living in the love of Krishna. But we are seeking to enjoy these things, which Prahlad Maharaj explains is like scratching an itch. If you have a rash that intolerably is itching, the tendency is to scratch it and scratch it and scratch it and keep scratching it. Have any of you ever had this experience? But as you scratch it, it makes the condition worse. It becomes just from a little itch to just spreading, it's growing, it's becoming redder. And if you want to stop the itching, you have to somehow or other tolerate the scratch. And the best way to do that is to occupy your mind and your hands in doing something else.
Otherwise, if you're just meditating on dhyach, 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 it's very difficult. But if you're doing something else, then it becomes tolerable. Idle mind is devil's workshop. So Prahlad Maharaj explained that all of these material desires are like itching. And the more we try to gratify them, the more the fire of kama increases. So this idea of do not resist or the problem will persist. Krishna says, Tani Saravani Samyamya Yukta Asita Matara. You must restrain your senses and simultaneously fix your consciousness upon me. So Krishna is saying you must resist those things that are unfavorable for the devotional service, but not just that. Replace it with the positive alternative of devotional service. Purifying, dynamic, energizing, and enjoyable activities in Krishna's service. Experience higher taste. So here we have Rishabhdev, where everyone in his kingdom, including the common people, did not ask or desire anything from him. He gave them the basic necessities. Now, how many people in this world are satisfied with basic necessities? In this world, you cannot possibly be satisfied with anything, however little or big it may be. What I see is the people who have the most are oftentimes the people working the hardest, longest hours in immense anxieties. Yes? It's not that I have earned 10 crores. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. I haven't seen that. I've earned 10, but there's so many people trying to take it away, and I have to fight them, and there's so many dying, there's so many more things I have just to maintain this. I have to expand and grow and working so hard and traveling here and there and all over the world just to try to somehow or other expand and expand and expand and protect. And yes, have you seen? It's not that you just... You can't! Because the more you have, the tendency is you become more infatuated and addicted to the whole system of getting more. Sometimes it's not even... A lot of big people, they don't even enjoy what they get. They don't have time. Their infatuation is just, they're addicted to the endeavor of getting more. It's like an intoxication. Yes? Srila Prabhupada said, whether you have 10 crores of rupees or whether you just have 10 paisas, all you can eat is a couple chapatis. Yes? And usually the people who only have a few paisa can digest the chapatis very nicely. And others have to go to Ayurvedic doctors and allopathic doctors and homeopathic doctors and spell fortunes just to try to digest their chapati. So it's an infatuation. Or this itch. Will-o'-the-wisp. It promises us pleasure. But the pleasure is like that of Goda Dimba. Maya is promising the ultimate perfection is to have the egg of a horse. And we work and we fight in our whole life. At the time of death, we're still trying to find that Dimba, Goda Dimba. And we have to take birth again to try to find it. But the reality is it does not exist.
Prabhupada explains, it's like trying to find nourish sense gratification. It is a process of trying to find nourishment and satisfaction by putting food in the image of your own self that you see in the mirror. Yes? It's a reflection. But who am I? The bodily concept is like a mirror image. We're thinking with this body, but who am actually I? Who's actually seeing into the mirror? Who am I? Who's seeing through these eyes? It's the soul. How to feed the soul? How to give satisfaction to the soul? That's the beginning of knowledge. And then we can have engineering degrees, and we can have medical degrees, and commerce degrees, and we can be good athletes on the cricket team, whatever you want to do. If you do it in harmony with the truth, then your life is substantial. Otherwise, will-o'-the-wisp. But the verse explains how Rishabhdev's citizens, they didn't want any of these horse eggs. They did not have any concern for the flowers growing in the sky or the will-o'-the-wisp. Because they had affection for the Lord. Rishabhdev is the Supreme Lord who descended as the king. Because of their affection for him, and because of the affection that they were receiving from him, this verse says they were completely satisfied. They didn't ask for anything. Rishabhdev, as a good king, gave them all the necessities of life. Nobody was in shortage of anything. But nobody wanted anything more because they were happy. They were satisfied. Obviously, they were working and they were creative and they were dynamic. Otherwise, how could a kingdom be progressive? But it wasn't out of greed. It was in a spirit of service. So this is the essence of life. Affection. It is the fundamental, essential need of every heart. Affection. Even a dog. If you rub a dog's neck really nicely, they feel your affection. They like that. You feed them. They're faithful to their master because they feel affection from their master. And the good fortune of a dog is to have an affectionate master. And the misfortune of a dog is to have no master. You've seen dogs with no masters in India. Yes? They're the most miserable creatures you can imagine. Yes? They have scabs and their hair is falling off and their teeth are coming out and they look angry. They just look angry at everyone and everything, and they're fighting amongst each other. Yes? We say, treat like a dog. And people see these dogs and just throw rocks. Children throw rocks at them and they have their slingshots and go, ping! It's very horrible. But if the dog has a good master, the master will, you just give a mean glance at the dog and the master will be ready to fight with you. Yes? In America, what they have for dogs? They have toilets for dogs. You know what the toilet for the dog is? The master. He has to walk behind the dog with special gloves and a little shovel. Because it's illegal in some cities. You've heard this before. It's illegal. You get arrested and get fined with with money you have to pay, lots of money, sometimes $200, if your dog responds to nature on the street and you don't pick it up. So in these cities, every master of a dog, they have their dog on the leash, and they all have a little shovel, and they're specially designed. This is modern Kali Yuga technology, where they have special little shovels and special little rubber gloves and everything, so very sanitary and nice. And every time the dog passes stool, you have your little shovel, and you take ladies with beautiful ornaments and silk gowns, and men with three-piece suits and tuxedos, they're walking with their dog, and ultimately, their occupational duty just to tell it as it is. Oh, madam, with your beautiful $10,000 nightgown, and oh, sir, with your wonderful tuxedo and your top hat, and you're coming out of your car with your dog and your Rolls Royce. In fact, you are the dog's toilet. That's latrine. Mr. and Mrs. Latrine. It's the reality. They're picking it up, and they're doing it with love. Actual love. You don't see Seva. That is their conception. So Prabhupada explains, a dog is very fortunate if it has a good master. Driving in a beautiful car, living in beautiful house, has every food it wants. The master's just walking behind it, protecting it, grooming it, getting nice haircuts and shampoo massages. That's what they do. Seriously, they have shampoo massages. They have spas for dogs. Spa, spa, it's like a health resort. Something like Lonawala. Lonawala. Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur prays that, my dear Lord, you are my Lord and I am your dog. Let me be Krishna's dog. Bhaktivinoda says, singing to his guru, that I am like a dog just running behind you, calling out, Krishna, 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 Krishna. So to be guru's dog, Krishna's dog, is the greatest shelter. But otherwise, we're like the street dogs. Very, very difficult situation. How did I get on this subject? Affection, yes. I may say that I'm just testing you, but actually I'm not. Everyone wants affection. Everyone needs affection. It's the fundamental craving of the heart. To give affection and to receive affection. Because that's what the nature of the soul is all about. If ultimately the soul is just an impersonal existence, the jiva is just an illusion, that Brahman temporarily is encaged in the network of karma, but when actually you realize that it's all an illusion, then you merge into the supreme, all-pervading, impersonal, formless existence of the supreme, where there's no form, where there's no personality, where there's no desire, where there's no affection, where there's nothing. If that's what our constitutional nature is, to be nothing, or to just be a formless energy,
then why is it that within the heart of every living being there's the deep necessity for affection? The Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, and all the great holy scriptures in the world explain why. Jivara Swarupoi Krishnara Nityatas Mamaivam So Jivaloki Jiva Bhutasana. We are part of Krishna. Bhakti is eternal. Prema is the eternal nature of the soul, to love, to serve. And in that, the greatest enjoyment comes. And what is that enjoyment? Simply affection. If you read the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan, it's all about nothing but affection. Everything else is just different ways, exciting, dynamic, variegated ways of expressing and receiving affection. Yes? That's what everything is for. To be utilized for the purpose of expressing our affection and receiving affection. That's all that really matters in life. If you're sick, you should try to get better. It's your duty. It's God's body. You should make it better. But even the healthiest people in the world are committing suicide, are depressed, are taking all kinds of antidepressants, are having nervous breakdowns. Health does not make you happy. Wealth does not make you happy. We've given the example many times. What if you own everything in the world, but you're the only person living in the world? Who are you going to enjoy it with? You can't really have affection, which is reciprocal, with things you have with people. Yes? So this is the nature of the soul. And this is the nature of God. In the Christian world, they often say, God is love. But what does that mean? In great scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam, it describes what love is and who God is. And what is that love? Bhaktyatvananyayashakya aham evam vidurjana jyatam drastam cha tatvena praveshtam cha parantapa. It is only by devotion that I can be understood as I am. Devotion is the eternal natural energy of the soul. And what is devotion about? Bhakti simply means, in very simple terminology, the affection that we have and need within our heart. You just repose that toward Krishna in a favorable way that pleases Him. That's all. That's all we have to do. So Rishabdeh's citizens, because Rishabdeh was giving them affection, and because they felt so much affection toward him, whether they were rich or poor, whether they were laborers or landowners or military politicians or Brahmins, they were all fully satisfied completely because they were exchanging affection. And that is what the Krishna consciousness movement is about. Exchange of affection between ourselves and God. And how do we do that? It is done through exchanges of affection with other living beings in a Krishna conscious consciousness.
Krishna says, Mad Bhakta Puja Vyadikam, that worshipping my devotee is better than worshipping me. It gives me more satisfaction. Prabhupada said, you can show your love for me by how you cooperate. And what real cooperation is based on not just tolerating each other. That's the minimal. At least we should try to do that much. But real cooperation on the spiritual platform is an exchange of love. We're encouraging one another. We're inspiring one another. Sometimes, in a spirit of affection, we're even correcting each other. The tendency of the conditioned soul, even in Krishna consciousness, if we're not so advanced, is we have our conceptions, but our ego is taking us away. Our misconceptions are taking us away. So real affection is to correct somebody. Prabhu, Mataji, you're off. You're offending people. You're doing disservice in the name of service. You're forgetting your sadhana properly. That is affection. But it should be done with affection. That is all important. We have seen devotees stop coming to temples because they've fallen away for some time due to whatever past conditionings or whatever disheartening experiences they have undergone. So sometimes people fall away and they're not chanting so much and they're not coming to the temple so much. And when you're not doing that, it takes a large degree of courage to come back. Yes? And when you come back and you're judged in the name of helping the person, how many rounds are you chanting? They don't know what to say. Oh, I haven't seen you in so long. Where have you been? People feel ashamed. Srila Prabhupada was not like that. If a devotee fell away, even into gross maya, if that person had the courage to even take a step to come back, Prabhupada just practically embraced them with tears and welcomed them. We heard the other day from one of our devotees. One devotee fell away and was into gross maya. And somehow or other he came to see Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was just showering so much affection and encouragement to try to help that person to come back. Now the fact is, Prabhupada could have chastised him for all the rounds that he missed, and he could have chastised him for all the mangal artis that he missed, and he could have chastised him for every time he broke the regulative principles, and it would have been true and justified. Sometimes devotees in their self-righteous way, boom, they pound someone with thunderbolts of harsh words, and someone, why did you do that to the person? He'll never come back. Because it's true, and the truth must be spoken. Haribo. The truth, higher than just the literal truth, is the spirit of truth, which is compassion, which is to be an instrument to encourage a person to take shelter of Krishna. That is truth. And Prabhupada did that. He encouraged. He was strong as anything, never compromising the principles. If you want to make proper advancement, you must follow your vows strictly. It was very, to study how Prabhupada did things is very important. Not only should we study what he said, but we should study
how he applied it in his own life. Prabhupada would say it.
I remember at New Vrindavan, one devotee asked Prabhupada. He was in a garden, beautiful garden, with nice trees and birds singing. So nice birds singing. And it was a summer day, evening, actually, the sun was setting. Prabhupada was on a beautiful hand-carved teakwood vyasasan with a beautiful gold silk back and seat. And it was just the essence of perfection for all the devotees, just to be sitting with Prabhupada on the grass at his lotus feet for 2 hours every evening, just sitting with him. And just, he would, Pradyumna Prabhu would read from the Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita, and he would just speak. And he'd give about an hour, hour and a half for questions and answers. And any question you wanted to ask, you could ask. But if it wasn't a good question, he would make sure you knew. Just one devotee asked a question, which I thought was a good question. But Prabhupada, for about 10 minutes, just pounded on that devotee's ego. Why you are asking this nonsense question? We were all like, just, we couldn't bear it. We all felt so sorry for this devotee. He was being crushed and clobbered and stabbed and burnt and chewed. Somebody, one nice devotee tried to, you know, there was silence, and the silence was, and one devotee asked another question just to change the subject, and Prabhupada just ignored his question and went right back to the original question. Why you cause me pain with these questions? So that was in 1976. How many years ago? 28 years ago. And I just, for the first time since then, I haven't seen that devotee who asked that question in 28 years. And during our yatra, how many of you were on our Vrindavan yatra? Raise your hand, please. During our Vrindavan yatra, we were going along Yamuna bank, and we were entering into Imlital. And just at the gateway of Imlital, I see this devotee. And he was with a group of other devotees. And we met. I was so happy to see him. And the first thing, he introduced himself, because I hardly recognize him, because 28 years, sometimes we change. And I said, "Oh, my dear godfather," we embraced. And I said, "I remember when Prabhupada chastised you so severely on that lawn at New Vrindavan. You know, it was we were listening to the bees and the birds, chip, 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 and the wind passing through the leaves of the tree, making a beautiful rustling sound, and the cows at a distance." Very peaceful atmosphere. And then there was a torrential storm of Prabhupada's thunderbolt-like words. Nobody could hear the birds or the bees here. It was from the most peaceful setting. It was like very intense. So I said, "I remember that." And I said, "Do you remember that?" He said, "A day has not passed in my life when I don't remember that." He said, "It's the fondest memory of my life." It wasn't fond when he was getting it. So
just like when you get, you know, major surgery. When you're going through the surgery, it's not a very fond memory, but if it cures you of a disease, then you think back of it very nicely. But it takes some time to. But he was very much, oh, you remember that? You were there? Oh, and immediately we were like best friends again, because I remembered that incident. He just had so much affection for me. How did we get on this? Affection. What is this? So in this way, yes, Prabhupada would sometimes chastise. And, oh, now I remember. The other question. That was one question that happened there. But on another night or evening, somebody asked the question, Srila Prabhupada? What if one is an initiated devotee and due to weak-heartedness, Prabhupada said, weak-heartedness? Become strong. Nonsense. And he said, but Prabhupada, what if, you know, you're having difficulty following regular principle? Prabhupada said, you have made vow? You have made vow before Guru? Before the deities of Radha and Krishna? Before the sacred fire? Before all the Vaishnavas? There is no question of anyone ever breaking their vows. There is no question of that. No gentleman will ever break his word. That was it. And devotee said, but what if we're having weakness? Prabhupada said, weakness? Rectify it! That's what we need to hear. Otherwise, if he doesn't set that standard, then we have so many justifications to just become lukewarm. If we want to make spiritual advancement, vyavasayatmaka budhir ekeha kuru nandana bahushaka hyanantascha budhayo vyavasayana, we must be resolute in purpose. We must have determination. There are so many spiritual teachers who just speak just what you like to hear. Just do a mantra and just flow. Just flow with the waves of life. And you'll flow much nicer if you just do this technique. Or give some donation or something like that. The Prabhupada, rectify it! That's the only way we could make perfection. That's the only way we'll have the determination and the willpower to make actual, real, tangible spiritual advancement. We have to be strict. So Prabhupada was like that. But if someone fell away due to weakness and broke the principles and did everything else that he's not supposed to do, even for years, and then they just come to the temple, you know, timid as a sheep because they're so ashamed, and they come before Prabhupada. Prabhupada embraces them. He weeps tears and encourages that devotee like anything to just take another step and another step and another step. So this balance is what is required. If we're too lenient, then nobody will ever make any real spiritual advancement. And if we have no lenience, then hardly anyone will survive. So whatever Prabhupada did was with affection, was with love, was with concern. And therefore, whether he handed you a rose of encouragement or a thunderbolt of correction, devotees benefited from it. Why? Because they had faith in his affection, in his genuine concern, in his love. Nityananda Prabhu forgave Jagai and Madhai with affection. Haridas Thakur forgave those who were trying to kill him brutally with affection. In the story of Shamananda Goswami, he was with his disciple Rasikananda performing Harinam Sankirtan, and there were some murderers, dacoits, who hated the devotees. And when they saw this Harinam Sankirtan, they just decided to kill all the devotees. Not just call the police. They wanted to just kill them. So they would kill the police too. So they took bows and arrows, many of them, and just shooting with all their might arrows right at the devotees in Sankirtan. And do you know what happened? By Shamananda Goswami's great powers, the arrows just started just shooting full speed at the devotees, and then they all turned around like boomerangs and came right back into the dacoits. But they came back in a more gentle way. Not to kill them, just to torture them a little. And what did they all do? They ran to Shamananda Goswami and begged forgiveness. And he embraced them, forgave them, and gave them initiation into the chanting of the Maha Mantra. So if we want to be free from the irresistible power of dedicating our life's energy to attain the Goda Dimba, the horse egg, there's only one possible way. Vishayavani vartante niraharasya dehina rasavarujam rasopyasya param dristva nivartate. The only way to permanently resist the temptations of the illusory energy is to experience a higher taste. And that taste is affection. Prabhupada once, one senior devotee quoted Prabhupada to me, and he said that Prabhupada told him that love and trust is the oil that keeps the machine of ISKCON going properly. What is oil? So many parts of a machine, what happens if there's not oil? There's friction, and they destroy each other. Just like even the best automobile with all foreign-made parts. Of course, now India is making better parts than foreign, I'm proud to say. So, anyways. So even the best motor engine, it's moving and moving and moving, but if there's not oil in it, each part of the engine is going to destroy the other part due to friction. But if there's proper oil, they work together to do wonderful things. So this is the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, where quarrel, fighting, envy, mundane egoistic competition is so deeply rooted in people's hearts that even we bring this conditioning, this baggage of ours in our minds to devotional service. It's the Nam Sankirtan movement. Sankirtan means together. Together we are promoting the glories of the Lord. Yes? But friction comes. If we can do things together nicely, we can do things so well for the benefit of ourselves and everyone. But if there's friction, we destroy each other. And the whole machine is very much disturbed. So what is that oil? Affection. There must be affection amongst the devotees, but not just mundane sentimental affection. Affection that is actually based on the proper philosophical understanding that we are eternal souls. Affection that is centered around what pleases Krishna, what pleases the spiritual masters. That is real affection. But it has to be practical, and it has to be real, and it has to work. Yes, Prabhupada did what worked. He didn't care what people said. He did what worked. Brahmins in India, some of them were criticizing Prabhupada because he was giving certain leniencies to women. But in the Western world, it worked, so he did it. Prabhupada lightened on certain things. And very orthodox people, oh, why are you doing like this? Because Prabhupada understood the spirit of devotional service and the spirit of all the laws and all the rules and regulations. It's to transform people's hearts into lovers of Krishna. He did what was practical. And he did things in such a way without compromising the essence ever. But he adjusted the details according to the time, place, and circumstance. Why? Because of affection. And therefore, this expressing of affection is all important amongst devotees. It is explained how we must worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is Madhyam Adhikari. If we want to really become advanced, we must worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Guru and those who are representing him in senior positions. We must make intimate friendships of affection with other devotees. We must be compassionate to our juniors and to the innocent people. And we must affectionately avoid those who are trying to drag our devotional service down. Yes? It's all based on relationship. So yes, we can only be free from the passion to possess more and more things, which are utterly artificial and superficial, when we have the power to give affection to others and receive affection from Krishna. To represent God means to represent Krishna's affection in this world. And there is nothing that will attract people to the philosophy and culture of Krishna consciousness more than if people see that there are affectionate relationships amongst devotees. That's great preaching. Because then people see that the theoretical knowledge of the philosophy practically works. If we're fighting, if we're gossiping, if we're backbiting, if we're blowing up against others and saying harsh words, if we're doing all of these things, we're actually destroying people's faith. But if they see that devotees are affectionate toward one another, despite so many differences in backgrounds, besides so many differences in particular levels of intelligence, the six Goswamis were affectionate toward the ruffians and the gentle, the scholars and the illiterate, the rich and the poor. It didn't matter. They saw the soul in everyone. So this is all important. We must learn how to encourage one another to deepen and increase our love for Krishna. And now I will begin class. Today is the appearance day of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. Should I speak something on the subject? When I came today, that's all I was going to speak about. Somehow or other, we got involved in this other discussion, which is all important. Gopal Bhatta Goswami was from a Brahmin family in Sri Rangam. I'll speak very briefly. I'm sure you all understand what that means. Honest, I'll speak briefly. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was performing his South Indian tour, he came to the very holy place of Sri Rangam, the largest temple in all of India, Ranganath, with seven gates in each of the four directions just to enter into the temple. Ancient deity that was worshipped in Ayodhya by Sri Ram of Lord Vishnu, laying down. After the war of Lanka, Ramchandra gave that deity to Vibhishan to bring back to Sri Lanka after coronating him as the king. But on the way, he stopped in what is Sri Rangam today, and the deity wanted to stay there. So since that time, he is laying very nicely in his yoga nidra. And there are so many beautiful stories about that deity. Yamunacharya that was his headquarters. And his foremost disciple, Ramanujacharya, of the Sri Sampradaya, that was his headquarters. So many great learned Brahmins and Vaishnavas were living there. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to that place, and he entered into the temple, and when he saw Lord Ranganath, he was dancing in ecstasy. He was seeing Lord Vishnu. And in the role of a devotee, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all symptoms of love were manifesting on his body. Such a beautiful form, with his arms raised, complexion like resplendent gold. Thousands and thousands of pilgrims and citizens and people from all directions were coming just to see the Lord dance. And as he was dancing in such love, chanting the holy name so loud with so much feeling, that he induced every single person there to raise their arms high and loudly cry out the holy name. So, Mahaprabhu was dancing and singing, and thousands and thousands and thousands of people were joining Nam Sankirtan. And by his mere glance, and by the power of the name, their love of God was being awakened. One Brahmin, who was one of the head priests of the temple, his name Venkata Bhatt, invited Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to come to his home. When the Lord came, Venkata Bhatta greeted the Lord along with his two brothers, Srimala Bhatt and Prabodhananda. And they washed. Venkata Bhatta first gave a sitting place to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and then washed his feet with scented water. And after washing his feet, he took that water and personally fed it to each and every one of his family members. And he had a son who was a boy, small boy. His name was Gopal Bhatt. And according to our holy scriptures, this was his first connection with Lord Chaitanya. He saw the beautiful form of the Lord. And then his father poured the water that washed Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet in Gopal Bhatta's mouth. And as soon as he drank it, tears poured from his eyes, his hair stood on end, his limbs trembled, his voice got choked up. He exhibited ecstatic love. The beautiful form and mercy of the Lord just entered into the core of his heart and took permanent residence there. Venkata Bhatta convinced Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that the Chaturmasya, the 4 months of the monsoon rainy season, has just begun and it is appropriate that a sannyasi should be in one place. Please remain in my house for the next 4 months. His request was with so much genuine love that the Lord accepted. Generally, he would never stay more than one night in any place, but he agreed to spend 4 months. And Venkata Bhatta, seeing his little son Gopal Bhatt's love and affection for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he ordered him to be Lord Chaitanya's personal servant and do all menial tasks for the Lord for the next 4 months. And Gopal Bhatta, with great affection, served the Lord. All little things he would do, so happily, with so much gratitude. And his love for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was growing with whatever he did. This is actually what devotional service is about. Whenever we offer service with love and devotion, Krishna reciprocates by increasing our love. In the spiritual world, no one's love is stagnant. Everyone's love is ever increasing. And Krishna's love is ever increasing. So one day, Gopal Bhatta, he was thinking that Lord Chaitanya, he's Krishna. Lord Chaitanya is the Prince of Braj. He's the son of Yashoda and Nanda. Lord Chaitanya is the Lord and Master of Srimati Radharani. He's the supreme enjoyer. Why? Why do I have to suffer the fate of seeing him in the role of a sannyasi? Why could I not have been born to see him as Navadvip Chandra with his beautiful long hair as the supreme enjoyer of Navadvip? With beautiful golden clothes and ornaments, with his devotees lovingly performing sankirtan and reciprocating in every way with the offerings of his devotees. Why? Why? The supreme enjoyer of Vrindavan, the Lord of Navadvip, is in those horrible flame-colored clothes of a sannyasi with a shaved head performing severe austerities. Why is my Lord performing austerities? How could I bear him see? How could I bear seeing him in this state? In this way, Gopal Bhatta
was so moved that he was in a secluded place. He was heaving with lamentation. His cries were like blazing flames of an uncontrolled fire. And while he was in that state that day, he fell into a sleep. At that time, on the pretext of a dream, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave him a vision. Would you like to hear? No? If you look tired, I get tired, so please. He saw little Gopal Bhatta, that he was in Navadweep. There was the Mother Ganga flowing so gracefully through the holy land that was none different than Vrindavan Dham. Gopal saw Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Navadweep Chandra with a beautiful top knot on his hair and cascading black, beautiful glistening hair coming down his broad golden shoulders. He was wearing beautiful garlands. His lotus-like eyes were beaming and shining with tears of love. He was dancing with his associates. Little Gopal saw Mahaprabhu performing his Navadweep pastimes with all of his loving devotees. And he was actually participating in the pastimes of Nadia. And then a Dvaitacharya came up to him and embraced him with love and affection. Then Lord Nityananda Prabhu came up to Gopal with great affection, gazed upon him with love and embraced him and spoke words of affection. And little Gopal was so overwhelmed that he was unable to say a single word to them in return. Suddenly, the dream broke, and he woke up, and he was in his house. And what he had just seen, he was in Navadweep. He was being embraced by Nityananda and Lord and Advaita Prabhu. He was participating in the Lord's Leela as the supreme enjoyer. Now he was in even greater distress. He was looking in the four directions. Where am I? What am I going to do? And the only thing this boy could do was think of running to where Lord Chaitanya was staying in his house. He just ran to the room where Lord Chaitanya was sitting. And there, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the crest jewel of all sannyasis, were sitting. And little Gopal just fell at his feet, seeking shelter from the core of his heart. Then he got up and looked, and what did he see? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu manifested to him the eternal original form of Godhead, Shamsundar. He was standing in a threefold bending form playing upon a flute. He had a complexion like tamal tree. He had a peacock feather adorning his beautiful hair. Lord Krishna was glancing upon little Gopal with so much affection, and Gopal was gazing upon him, the fulfillment of all his heart's desire. He was seeing Krishna face to face. And then that beautiful form of Shamsundar, Gopinath, manifested Navadweep Chandra, Gauranga Mahaprabhu. There he saw the ultimate object of all of his prayers and his aspirations, Lord Chaitanya, with beautiful, beautiful hair coming down upon his back and his shoulders, hair that was so enchanting
that it mesmerized the 14 worlds. He saw Lord Chaitanya in the ecstasy of Sankirtan with beautiful lotus-like eyes that were filled with tears. His nose like sesame flower, his lips like fresh bimba fruit, his lovely ears, his face was like it was emanating golden light, like hundreds and thousands of autumn moons. He had beautiful garland of fresh forest flowers descending below his knees. Wonderful ornaments were decorating his chest, beautiful earrings on his ears. As Gopal was gazing upon Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he fell at his feet and surrendered his life, weeping and crying. And then when he got up and looked again, there was Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with his shaved head and saffron robes of sannyasi. And Lord Chaitanya, seeing the love of Gopal Bhatta, picked him up on his own lap and embraced him. And Lord Chaitanya bathed Gopal Bhatta's little body with his own tears of love. And he spoke very affectionately. He instructed him that your mother and father are great devotees. You should serve them with great affection and enthusiasm. And after they give you their blessings and depart from this mortal world, you must quickly go to Vrindavan. There you will find Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami. The three of you should be like the most intimate friends and brothers to fulfill the desire of my heart. This is very interesting because Lord Chaitanya gave this instruction before he ever met Rupa or Sanatan Goswami. But the Lord knows past, present, and future. In this way, Gopal Bhatta, along with his father and mother and uncles, served Lord Chaitanya throughout the 4 months of Chaturmasya. At the end of that time, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu bid them farewell. That was very difficult. Trimala Bhat, Venkata Bhat, Prabodhananda Saraswati. After Lord Chaitanya left, they were besides themselves with transcendental grief. What will we do now? The world has become a vast desert of emptiness without Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is love. Sunyayatam jagat sarvam govinda virahena me. Mahaprabhu said, without bereft of the sight of Govinda, the entire universal creation has become a dreary, horrible void. They were feeling in this way. Who is going to attract thousands and thousands and thousands of people to come to Sri Rangam Temple and perform Harinam Sankirtan? Who is going to give the common people ecstatic prema bhakti? Who is going to speak? Who are we now going to sit and speak so lovingly about Krishna with? Who's going to tell us the wonderful jokes he would tell us every day? What will we do? No longer can we go every morning, every afternoon, and every evening to the river Kaveri to take our bath with him. How will we survive? And in our house, who will inspire us to taste the sweet nectar of Krishna's love by inducing us to chant the holy names?
But in their separation, they actually experienced great happiness in each other. This is a wonderful thing. In separation from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by their association with each other, by speaking about Him, by remembering Him, by doing His will, by chanting the holy names and His instruction, they could feel His presence. In this way, they were always in bliss. Years went by, and little Gopal, so enthusiastically and genuinely, with great attention, served his mother and father. And he also studied under his uncle, Prabodhananda Saraswati, who taught him every subject that he had learned from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was a great scholar of scriptures. Little Gopal, as he grew up, he became such a profound scholar, the very embodiment of humility, self-control, and devotion. And in their old age, Venkatabhatta and his good wife gave him the blessing and instruction, "Now, my child, go to Vrindavan. This is Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's wish for you." And then they passed from this world and went back to the spiritual abode. So, Gopal went, by this time he was a man. He walked from Srirangam and Tamil Nadu all the way to Sri Vrindavan Dham. And when he arrived, Rupa Sanatan Goswami, in great bliss, they welcomed him and accepted him as their own brother. Then they wrote a letter to Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Puri, Nilachala. And one day he was in the house of Kashi Mishra where he lived. His room was named the Gambira. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was with Gadadhar Pandit and Gopinath Acharya. And he stood up. He was in a very, very special mood. He got up with Gadadhar and Gopinath Acharya and walked out of the Gambira. Gadadhar was such a dear friend of Lord Chaitanya. He was life and soul. One of the names of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Chaitanya Charitamrita is Gadadhar Prananath, the life and soul of Gadadhar. And in this regard, the holy scriptures describe what type of relationships the devotees had with each other. No one could possibly explain or comprehend the love between Gadadhar and Nityananda, the affection between Gadadhar and Haridas Thakur, the intimate affection between Gadadhar and Pundarik Vidyanidhi, the incredible love between Gadadhar and Advaitacharya. Gadadhar was so loved by all the devotees. What we were speaking before, to love Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to love Krishna, means to love with intimate friendship the Lord's devotees. And that's a barometer. Anyone can say, "I love Krishna," but how much do we really love the Vaishnavas? They loved each other on a spiritual platform of serving one another. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the devotees went to the Tota Gopinath temple. And there Lord Chaitanya sat down and requested Gadadhar Pandit to read Srimad Bhagavatam. They discussed Srimad Bhagavatam for hours, every day. And then Lord Chaitanya said, "I am feeling anxiety in my heart. because I love those devotees in Braj so much. I have not heard anything from them in many months. Anxiety is filling my heart. Just when he said that, a messenger came right into the Gopinath temple and said, I have come from Braj, Vrindavan Dham, with a letter for you from Rupan Sanatan Goswami. Oh, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so eager to read that letter. He put it to his head and to his heart. And he was praising, as if he had so many mouths, he was praising the glories of Rupan Sanatan Goswami. And then he read the letter. The letter said that we are all doing fine. We are all happy in your service, in your mission in Vrindavan. And we are very, very, very grateful to tell you that Gopal Bhatta has come. He's living amongst us. And he has become our most dear friend. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so happy. He was so happy. He was in ecstasy. What brought him this ecstasy? To hear the loving exchanges between the devotees. It is natural. The Lord is the Supreme Father. The spiritual master on his behalf is a father. What gives the father the most happiness? When he sees the children having affectionate relationships with one another to do the right thing. That is what Sankirtan is all about. Blissfully, intimately, united, to dance together, to chant the names together. You sound tired and hungry, so I will end soon. So, Mahaprabhu was so happy to hear of the affectionate unity between these devotees, but their affectionate unity was centered around serving the mission of the Lord. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wrote back to them a beautiful letter, saying, the three of you should live just like brothers. I'm so happy with what you're doing. That you have written such beautiful books. And you will write so many more wonderful books. And you will be pleased to know that there is already someone born on earth that's going to distribute those books all over the world. Srinivasacharya. He distributed them through Bengal. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur distributed them throughout India. And who distributed them throughout the whole world? Srila Prabhupada ki. So we can understand how dear Prabhupada is to the heart of the Lord. Then Lord Chaitanya sent gifts along with his letters back to Vrindavan. He sent his own kopins, an outer cloth, sent little kamandalu, sitting place, and the Goswamis took those remnants in with great affection because tadit, the paraphernalia of the Lord, is the energy of the Lord. We can feel the presence of the Lord. We can worship the Lord's paraphernalia. In this way, Gopal Bhatt Goswami lived amongst the six, as one of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. A beautiful story I will tell of how he was assisting Rupa Goswami in every way in the worship of Sri Radha Govinda. His life, his soul, his everything was the deity of Govinda Dev. But then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave him an instruction that you should worship the Lord in the form of Shalagram Shiva. And Gopal Bhatta Goswami revealed his heart
to Rupa Goswami that this is what the Lord has told me. So Rupa Goswami spoke. He said, your life, your soul, your everything is Govindadev. However, it is Lord Chaitanya's will that you worship him in a separate form of your Shalagram Shiva. And on the order of Rupa Goswami, which was given with so much affection, he worshipped with great care his little Shalagram Shiva. But he was wishing in his heart that he could perform the worship of offering crowns and flutes and decorative clothes and ornaments to Krishna. But how much can you offer to a little Shiva? So just after Narasingha Chaturdasi, he went to take his bath at Yamuna. And when he came with the water of Yamuna to perform his puja, he saw from his Damodar Shila, it had expanded into the beautiful swarup of Radha Damodar. It was glorious. The first thing he did after just worshipping the Lord in the self-manifesting form is he went to Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, who came. And Rupa Goswami personally named the deity Radha Raman, because he appeared just near Nidiban, where Krishna gives pleasure to Srimati Radharani. And the speciality of that deity is Krishna manifested to fulfill all Gopal Bhatta Goswami's desires. His feet were non-different than the feet of Madan Mohan. His chest and hands were non-different than that of Radha Gopinath. And his beautiful smiling face was non-different than his own worshipable Lord, Govindadev. And one day, after some years of serving the Lord, it doesn't actually say how much time, but after some time, worshipping Radha Raman as his life and soul, he was thinking that Lord Chaitanya ordered me to carry out the orders of my father, and my father told me that Lord Chaitanya is my worshipable object in life. I'm worshipping Krishna. I should be worshipping Lord Chaitanya. What to do? And as he was thinking that way, right at the feet of Radha Raman manifested the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then he knew that in worshipping Radha Raman, he was performing the full-fledged worship of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There was no difference. He established such precise and carefully thoughtful deity worship for Radha Raman. Along with Sanatana Goswami, he composed the great literature Hari Bhakti Vilas, which is very much a standard of deity worship for all devotees in our sampradaya, and also explains the proper etiquette and behavior of Vaishnava in all various circumstances. He worshipped the Lord in this way, his life and soul. So today, let us offer our most respectful prayers to Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami and to that great personality who has brought us the infinite causeless mercy of Krishna and all of these acharyas, Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much.